It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, I hit the button. That's the upshot of working from home, is I actually upgraded the version on Audacity, so it should work really good.
Okay.
All right, let's get the series crap out of the way, despite Addy being hilariously crazy over there. So as everybody recalls, my dad fell down the stairs, messed up a vertebra, but that's healing just fine, and then he had concussion, and then he got better from the concussion, but then he got worse again, and that happened a few times, which apparently is a thing that can happen called post-concussion syndrome.
Yeah, you mentioned that, yeah.
Yes. And at a certain point, it had happened enough, because it happened several times now, and he always has to go to the ER for it, because it also could be a stroke, because he's really old.
Oh, yeah, sure.
It also was accompanied by pain that didn't happen originally, so that was weird. And finally, they decided they'd probably like an MRI, but it wasn't worth the risk of COVID.
Oh, okay.
Because, again, 85.
So that was happening kind of at the same time they were realizing there might be something else.
Yes, yeah, at the point where because they did some CT scans and they didn't find anything.
Right.
But they wanted to do MRI with contrast, where you drink the fluid and then you can see what's going on.
But that must have been like in February or late February or something?
It was more recent than that, I think, when they decided. And then it was just sort of too late for that kind of thing. But then he had another episode recently. And that one was bad enough. They got him in an ambulance and the whole thing. So they finally decided it was worth the risk. And although I gotta say, the hospital they went to, which I think was the one in Lincoln City, really was well set up to minimize infection. Mm. Like, they had this whole thing where they've made these little hallway things, and like after your registration, you get sat in a very specific spot, and there's nobody else near you, and when it's time for you to go in, you walk down this long hall that goes all around the ER, and all the doors are locked, and they've told you which number door to go to, and the nurse meets you there and unlocks it, and so it's a whole thing, so that was good. But they got the MRI done, and turns out it has nothing to do with the concussion. He's got a couple of brain tumors.
And was this related to his fall also, do they think?
No, I think this is a
completely
sort of happy coincidence that we found it because of this. One's pretty small, one is pretty darn huge. And they are glioblastomas, which are bad.
So malignant or whatever.
Yeah. But that particular... a coworker of mine, her husband had that and went through that recently, so I have an inkling of what is coming. At this point, we don't know anything. At this point, they got referrals and everything, and now it's in the hands of a neurosurgeon down in the valley, and they have to wait basically a few days to hear back from them as to what the next steps are. So they're kind of in a holding pattern, but I mean, it's not going to be good. there's not a good version of this.
And so at this point, you don't know if surgery or if...
Yeah, I mean, I think it... The other thing about this particular kind is that it can change on a dime. And so things can go really bad and then suddenly be better and then bad again, or things can be going good and that, like, it's... It's kind of all over the place. Operability will be a consideration, but I mean, at this point in general, with his age, sort of anything could happen at any time.
Right. That's
they have him now already on medication that is for brain swelling, so that should ease up the pain and maybe even these concussion-like symptoms he's been getting. So that should help in the short term. But yeah, we gotta wait and see. Again, Upshot, quote unquote. So my sister couldn't go see them because of the fear of COVID.
Okay.
And the doc now said, yeah, that's, you don't not see your family when this is going on.
Right.
And he's like, don't, not all at once or anything like that. But like, so Saturday, my sister and her husband are going to go visit them.
Okay.
My niece will stay at home and all that. So, and we're not going out at this point. They don't want us to go out, which I agree. Anyway, at this point, I think that's just more people worrying there. I don't think that's helpful.
Sure.
But also, they're really worried about the idea of us trying to take a plane or something like
sure,
that
sure.
with what's going on, because we're now showing that it, you totally can die from coronavirus even if you're younger. So,
yeah.
Yeah, so a heck of a time for this all to be going down. But, yeah, so that's what's happening. I don't particularly feel like talking about it at this point or anything. I've only known for a few hours. I just wanted to get that out there and tell you mostly yeah. about it.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, by happy coincidence, this came today.
Well, what is that?
I'm not entirely sure. Trish got it for me.
It's a stuffed animal type thing, but it's not a stuffed animal. It's what is it?
I think it's basically a pork chop.
A what?
Pork chop. Japanese pork chop. Tonkatsu, specifically. So Trish found this line of toys in Japan, these little stuffed animals, that I don't think they're all food, but a lot of them are, and they're basically just sad. Like, she had a hard time with the translation, but some, like, they all just like sit in the corner and they're all kind of, and this particular one is tonkatsu, which is a breaded pork chop. It's a Japanese dish that I'm fond of, and this one is a very, very sad tonkatsu because that pink nose is the one bit of like actual meat, and otherwise it's just breading, so it's not particularly appetizing to anybody. So
And it has little eyes.
Yeah, there's little eyes. And little
feet.
And little hands.
And arms, or hands, I guess.
That are sewn together, but you can still get under them.
Oh, yeah. So, like, they can grab your finger.
Exactly.
Or anything else, I suppose, they can fit in there.
And he's got beans on the, feel them. There's beans on the bottom so that he sort of stays upright.
Oh, sure.
He's very soft.
It's a very strange little thing.
Yep.
But this is a... Like, the actual food is something you like.
Yes.
Does it really resemble the food, though, at all?
Oh, no, it's a giant round thing. No, the food looks like an actual pork chop covered in breading.
Okay.
Like, yeah, no, it looks like a breaded cutlet of some sort.
So there's no reason anyone would think that's a pork chop, except that that's what the people who sold it to you said.
Yeah, no, when it came out, I thought it was actually, this is good for people who know Pokemon, it looks a little like a Diglett. And I was like, why is Trish getting me a Diglett?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because we're not into Pokemon particularly, but it kind of looks like that. And I thought, well, it is cute. Maybe she just got it because she thought it was cute. But no, it's not a Diglett. It's a Tonkatsu. So yeah, been hugging him a lot today. We got the table, the desk set up a few days ago in the spare room.
For working.
No one's been using it.
Oh.
To be fair, Trish got it for her, so it's not my problem. She hasn't been using it. But my back has been just incrementally getting a little worse every day. And so today, I said, screw it, I'm going to use the desk. And I set things up in there in the hardback chair. So hopefully that is going to help. We'll see. It was not fun to begin with, because this problem is the chair is very hard. Like, it's like a wooden chair. And that can be rough on me after a while, but...
And your massage therapist had to close down
before
your
appointment. Yeah, because all the massage therapists
had to close down. The governor announced that.
In the whole state. But so, yeah, so I was doing that today. And the real nice thing about it, I can't get my extra monitor to work, unfortunately. But I could use the Bluetooth mouse and keyboard. So that was easy for, like, typing things and stuff. So
sure.
That was good. I'll probably use that tomorrow again. Hello everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. The only part. Oh, I had one for this. The only podcast, I don't know what it is. The only podcast where you're really going to talk about dad's brain tumors and plushy pork chops in the intro. That's, I mean,
yeah, that probably does
that
cover
seems
it.
Fair.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 471.
471.
We didn't really make a big deal out of the fact that our 9th anniversary was just a couple weeks ago.
We did not. We were trapped inside. I didn't wear any green on St. Patrick's Day.
I didn't either. My wife did, but I didn't.
In fact, I was wearing red. I don't know what that means.
My mom made a big deal out of St. Patrick's Day when I was a kid, wearing green, and she decorated and stuff, you know, the house. Is that something your parents or your mom did?
No.
Or?
When I was growing up, it was a school hall. Like we did stuff at school.
Oh, sure, sure.
Back in the day, at school, you got to celebrate, usually with a party and with some sort of art project and all sorts of things. All the white people holidays.
Oh, yeah. St. Patrick's Day, Valentine's Day, everything.
Halloween.
Christmas even.
Christmas, just, yes. And, all of that.
And it was called Christmas.
I think in
like
later
that.
Grades in elementary school.
Easter.
We did a winter thing, but it's still like Christmas trees and we sang Christmas songs. Yeah. So, like, whatever. I think that's how you do it. And then you sing one version of dreidel, 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 and then you evened it out.
Okay.
Although that still happens now. And, in fact, at my niece's winter concert, they did a lot of Christmas songs and made a big joke. In fact, basically they have one Jewish guy in the choir, and he talked about how there are not enough Hanukkah songs in here, and he did one, and then they had a couple other things. And there were bits where they wore Christmas sweaters, and he had a Hanukkah sweater, and this whole thing.
just to be clear, I don't mind them being called winter concerts or whatever. It's just when I was a kid, they weren't. They were called Christmas concerts.
And I think in the beginning they weren't for me, but I think by later grades they were. But they were also identical.
Yeah, yeah. They didn't change anything.
They just called it that instead because they're like, well, there's Jewish people. I'm like, no, there aren't. we're in Salem, Oregon.
Yeah.
I didn't meet a Jewish person until college.
Yeah, I didn't either. I didn't.
Like, I don't even know. I've heard of them.
Well, or in fact, not just that, but there wasn't, unless there were, you know, kids who were rethinking the religion they were raised with. I didn't know anybody who wasn't Christian, for that matter.
Yeah.
So, so that was, yeah, that was a thing.
We had one Jehovah's Witness.
Oh.
Who got to be excused from things?
Sure, sure. I was going to say we might have had a Mormon that person lived, went to school in Knoxville.
We had tons of Mormons, but they were fine with it. Mormons celebrate all the same holidays.
Right.
That's fine.
That's right. That's right.
For those of you just joining us and don't know what's happening, we could get more listeners because of the quarantine. In fact, I've been meaning to. There's a thing at work where people are putting together playlists and TV shows and things, and somebody asked me to recommend podcasts, and I was like, mine. And they said, I knew you were going to say that. I feel like ours could be a good one because there's a lot of just hanging out, talking. That's what people need right
it's
now.
It's pretty harmless, too. I mean,
but it's also, it feels like socializing.
Yeah, well, people tell us that.
Yeah, and a lot of podcasts are like that, but some aren't. But I think we hit that niche. So if you just want to hang out with two dudes, that's us.
Yeah, sometimes I'll watch, I won't listen to podcasts, but sometimes podcasts, they'll shoot video of the podcast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And maybe I'll watch that on YouTube or part of it. And, you know, there are some that are very,
excuse me, I'm very burpy today.
Are very popular and that people seem to like and that people say are high quality. And they're not that much different than ours, actually.
No.
I mean, in terms of their format. I mean, obviously, they're funnier people, maybe, and smarter people.
Our
I don't know,
audio
but
is better than Seth Meyers right now.
Well, that's true.
I watched
a lot
the video
of
Seth Meyers.
Starting.
He's doing his late night stuff from his house.
Yeah.
And the audio, because he's in essentially his stairwell.
Right.
The audio is really echoey.
Yeah, yeah.
Was also the first ever coronavirus quarantine, all done remotely, no audience, instance of jokes Seth can't tell. And it did not work well in that format. Do you not know jokes Seth can't tell?
No.
It's a regular bit he has on his talk show, on Seth Meyers' late night talk show. And the premise is, they've got a very diverse writing staff, and they come up with all sorts of jokes. But so it's not uncommon for them to come up with jokes that would not necessarily be appropriate coming out of his straight white male mouth.
Oh, okay.
So once a week, they have this segment where they have two of his writers, one who's a black woman and one who's a gay Puerto Rican woman.
Oh, maybe I have.
And he does the setup for the jokes, and they do the punchlines.
Oh, okay.
And it always ends with them telling him to try one, and he's like, I don't think that'll go well. And they're like, no, go ahead. And so he does one, and they get super offended. And he's like, you said it would be okay. And they're like, you are a monster. And they're like, black women and lesbians are liars. And that's always how it ends. But it's very weird without the audience and with them all in different windows of the...
I mean, that,
Skype or whatever.
That was true for all of the late night people who were doing stuff at home. It was very weird. I tried to make a joke about it last week when I said we weren't recording in front of a live audience, and therefore you might not know when the jokes land because the audience responding, I mean, that's an important cue.
Absolutely.
For a lot of the late night stuff. And when you hear it without the audience responding, you realize, well, it's not really quite as funny, is it?
Oh, and sitcoms are built on that.
Well, that's true.
People have done, like, taking out the laugh track.
Yes,
of,
yes.
I think Big Bang Theory is a really good one. Big Bang Theory gets chilling if you don't have the laugh track.
Oh, yeah.
It's really... Yeah. But I said I was going to say how the show works. So, we have a hat. It's magic in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Folks, cool people like yourselves, awesome peoples, people who we still can use your help. Keep it up. They write in to the email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, questions, that sort of thing. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. It's just super happy to be here. Servants. Draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the whole show, except for the parts that aren't, which is most of it. Jazz sent the thing about Taskmaster, right?
Yes, I think.
Yes. I finally was watching all of those today, and that's I love that. That's brilliant. Yeah. So those I've talked about Taskmaster on this show before, where a bunch of comedians get together and they have this fictitious thing that this comedian, Greg Davis, is the Taskmaster, and he gets them to do all these weird things and awards them arbitrary points and somebody wins. Well, because of the quarantine, Alex Horn, the creator of Taskmaster, and Greg Davis are doing a thing where every couple of days they put up a YouTube video where they give everyone an at-home task and you're supposed to videotape what it is. And then you send it in, and they show the ones they like best, and the Taskmaster judges certain ones. And they've had two so far, and they've had the results for both.
Okay.
And the first one was throw a piece of paper into a bin, most spectacular throw wins. And then the one that they've just put up today, the results was turn your bathroom into some place you'd go for a fun night out. And there were a lot of those that were pretty good. But yeah, it's been very entertaining. I just love all the stuff people are doing to like hold together people's sanity.
Yep.
While they're trapped here.
It's because
I'm losing
sometimes.
My mind. But
are you? I mean, is it?
Yeah, no, I'm getting pretty stir crazy. And we're just watching a lot of things. We bought a game. So there's a version of Gauntlet for the PS4. Gauntlet Slayer Edition.
Really?
Yes.
I'm not sure I knew that.
And if you act now before the end of the month, it's $5.
We like playing Gauntlet.
We got it last night and started trying it.
And it's got couch co-op with it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that's what we did. Yeah. It's worth $5.
I would think so.
I don't know how much more we'll play. It is a very different vibe. The control scheme is very odd. but you do get used to it. It's surprisingly hard. We set it on easy, and it's still pretty challenging.
Really?
We were a little surprised about that. It helped. I started over and switched to a different character. So they've got arguably five characters. They've got the four traditional characters, plus a fifth one that you got to pay money to. It's an add-on, basically. Mm. And we didn't get that. But so Trish is playing the Valkyrie because she loves the Valkyrie. Mm-hmm. And I played the Wizard because the Wizard, they did something unique in this one. The Wizard has a lot of different spells. And what it is the three non-X keys are three elements, are ice, fire, and lightning. Mm. And what you do is you need to hit two elements. And it can be two different ones or two of the same one, but whatever combination you hit creates a spell, and then the right thumbstick uses that spell.
Huh.
And so there's a bunch of different ones. So there's an ice beam, and there's exploding frost that people. There's a shield. There's a lightning bolt. There's all sorts of different ones. It is very hard for me to keep track of, and to like switch suddenly because like there's some stuff that doesn't work close range and stuff. So when the monsters are swarming, so I found that very difficult. And then I switched over to the elf, and the elf is easy mode. The elf has a more powerful sniper shot, but the most thing is with the right thumbstick, you just are constantly shooting arrows. Like, just nonstop, and you can move around while you're doing it. It also has a dodge, because it doesn't have that very high hit points. Mm. So, yeah, I'm way more comfortable with that. But it's an afternoon's fun, at least, and it's worth $5, but yeah.
Mm.
But it is different. Don't get super excited.
Don't get super excited.
It is top down, like the, well, not quite top down. It's almost top down, I think. More like the original than like the ones like Dark Legacy and stuff. That was a very different vibe.
Oh, okay.
We really, that's probably what you remember playing.
Yep, we did.
And that's what we played, and that was fun. It's really easy to shoot the food in this game. We do it constantly, which is bad. I know it's a classic part of the game. We also had a level that was really annoying. So you know how death shows up eventually?
Yes.
And the tradition, death shows up when you're taking too long.
Yeah.
That's how it normally works.
Yeah.
Not so much this time. We had a level where death just shows up for like 10 seconds and then goes away for like 10 seconds. And then throughout the level, the whole, like from the beginning.
Hmm.
Really terrible. So.
What's it look like? I mean, does it?
It looks good.
Yeah.
It's a very different art style than Dark Legacy. Mm. But yeah, it looks decent. It's they're small, but yeah, I think the art's pretty good.
Is it like a Diablo 3 type of thing or
closer, but much more simplified?
Yeah.
It is based around the idea like you can buy new versions of like everything you're wearing and your weapons and stuff like that, and that's what you're clearly going for, is you just sort of keep farming until you can buy cooler gear,
right,
whatever, which we have not managed yet at all, but not quite finished with Umbrella Academy. Started watching Devs on Hulu.
Oh yeah, how was that?
Weird as fuck.
That's what I heard.
I'm liking the weird. It is very...
Nick Offerman's in that, right?
Nick Offerman is in that, yeah. It is very... Nick Offerman is essentially a tech billionaire who runs this company that's very tech billionaire-like. Like, everybody's in their little groups, and they're all doing their things, and he's very hands-on, and it's all the best and brightest and all this stuff. And one of the people gets promoted up to Devs. And Devs is a secret project group that is separate. And, like, you're very carefully vetted before you're allowed to go in there. And you can't take anything with you, and you can't talk about what you've seen, and shit happens in there. And so this person goes to Devs, and then they find out what's going on, and then things happen, and now it's a big group freaky mystery and stuff like that.
Now, this is a dramatic role for Nick Offerman, so it's kind of like his Ozark, like Jason Bateman's serious in Ozark, and this is like his Ozark project.
And with both of them, they both have done dramatic work before these two
and
shows.
And are good at it. They're very good at it, yeah.
But this, it's a very good, he's doing very well with this role. He disappears into it a little bit, which is cool. I haven't seen him do that very often.
Oh, did you not see the thing about McDonald's or whatever he was in? With
The thing about McDonald's.
Yeah, it was about Ray Kroc, really. And Michael Keaton plays Ray Kroc. Nick Offerman's in that, and like you just said, he disappears into his role. It's really, good.
I think he's a great actor, but he has Alan Alda factor to me in that it's always clearly Nick Offerman. This one, I wouldn't say I quite forget it, but there are times where I stop thinking about it, which is interesting to me.
I mean, it helps if he's, he usually has all his facial hair when he's doing his shtick.
No, which he does. In this one, he's very shaggy. He has shaggy, long blonde hair and a full beard.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of a Grizzly Adams look, honestly.
But it still looks like he usually looks, kind of, or very different?
No, it's clearly him.
Yeah.
If you didn't know going into it, as soon as you saw him, you'd be like, oh, that's Nick Offerman. And he also sounds like he's not affecting a weird voice or anything.
Oh, okay.
It just sounds like him.
Okay.
But it is very weird. It is very navel-gazy. There are a lot of very long, silent shots. Mm. There is a very intentionally discordant and disconcerting soundtrack.
Mm.
We watched the first episode. Trish did not like it. And she says, I'm going to try one more, but I think I'm out. And then she tried one more. And I'm like, so you out? She's like, no, goddammit. Because the mystery is interesting. Unfortunately, I jumped the gun a little bit. It's not done yet.
Oh.
It's still, it's airing once a week, and it still has like three more weeks or something. But hopefully. It's supposedly a limited series, so supposedly it'll all wrap up. And that'll be nice. I am still watching Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. I still really like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. And I feel strange about it.
I mean, it's critically acclaimed. I mean,
it is. It's like Cougar Town and some of these others. It's just very poorly named. Although it apt, like the whole premise of the show, is this woman basically had an identity crisis when she was being a high-powered attorney in New York, and she happened to run into her ex-boyfriend from like high school summer camp, and decides that she, by sheer coincidence, he's about to move back to his crappy little Inland Empire town in California. And she, by coincidence, was like, I need a change. I'm going to move there. And the whole show is very much about her, sometimes intentionally, often in denial that she's doing it, trying to sort of win him back, and it's not working. But it's hilarious, very insightful, huge ensemble cast that is great, and really good music and dance numbers. Just
that's what it's
really hilarious,
most known for. Yeah,
it has a lot of this thing that I encounter in the world a lot, where there's a fair bit of gender tropes in it.
Mm-hmm.
They're fairly self-aware. It's that sort of thing where it's like, this is a trope that all men do this, or this is a trope that all women do this, but wink wink, a lot of us do.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I'm not sure that's even necessarily, and I always feel weird about that for two reasons. One, I don't know that I feel comfortable with something making the judgment. Like, I have this very strong urge to be like, I want to have a woman watch this show and tell me what she thinks of
it. Right.
And the other thing, of course, is I don't relate to those tropes in almost all cases. And so I always find it weird. Like, I'm like, this is probably fair in that there's probably a large demographic that does relate to this, but I frequently don't.
Well, and
so then it feels weird to me.
I have the same experience. And then on top of that, I feel like I know exactly what you're talking about, where, yeah, this is a trope. Yeah, this is an unfair stereotype, but it's kind of true. To me, that almost seems to contradict the fact that, well, if it is kind of true, it's a cultural thing and it's kind of damaging, and maybe we shouldn't be reinforcing it all the time.
Yeah.
So I get the joke, but I just don't think it's funny.
Yeah.
I guess.
Well, and it can be tricky because there's also an argument that says it can be positive in that people don't have, if, how do I put this? How many women in your life have you ever heard say, I know this makes me a bad feminist, but, and it's something mm-hmm. about how they feel. And there's a little bit of like saying, yes, we've all been raised in this society.
Yeah, right.
And this is, and it's not our fault, and we don't, you
right.
know, You don't have to deny who you are because of it. You just need to be aware. And there's a lot of great subversive stuff. Just the one I watched last night. I don't know. The most recent one I watched. She makes a terrible decision and ends up basically going out, finding a guy on Tinder to pick up and take home to have sex, which is very out of character for her. And so they get in the bedroom and it sparks a musical number in which she's doing this very sexy song about, oh, this sexy, I don't even want to know your name, we'll just call each other baby. But then you get to the chorus and it's things like, please don't be a murderer. and a lot of stuff like that. It's like, oh, I like you wild and all this, and now you know where I live, should I be worried about that? No, it's fine, it's very sexy. Like, there's a lot of very subversive shit like that. And yeah, just extremely self-aware things.
Well, and to be clear, I don't think people shouldn't make these jokes or this conversation shouldn't be had or anything. It just, it doesn't do it for me as humor. Yeah. That's all.
And that's the thing, is it walks a weird line. Like, they're doing really well with the characters. A lot of these characters are not on paper sympathetic. Mm. But I'm starting to like most everyone in the cast. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the musical numbers are both really well done and hilarious. Her best friend sings her a great song about facing your fears that really quickly spirals out of control, where it's like, run with scissors and just punch the bear in the face if it's chasing you. And then gets really weird. It starts getting to go ahead and wipe back to front if you want. Don't worry about an infection. And she's got a whole backing choir that's little kids, and they've got giant scissors, and they're doing this like right in front of their face. And it's very clever. I like it.
Well, and as I understand it, the cast is very good. Like, it's not just the writing is clever. It's very well executed.
They're very well, and they clearly, I mean, and they would have had to picked. Clearly, the cast had to audition as actors and as singers.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, and it's just, it's fun. I'm really liking it. So that's cool. And I feel like we would have seen some movie, but no. I don't think so. How about you? What you been doing? Trapped at home.
Well, I mean, as I said before, it's not really that different for me. I don't really get out very much. So it's the only thing that's really changed is my wife is like around during the day, which is actually nice. We did see a couple movies. We saw Doctor Sleep and...
Oh, you did, huh? Yeah.
Terminator Dark Fate. I don't really have any...
Wow. All right.
I don't have much to say about either one of them, except that they share some interesting things in common. They both have fairly good ratings on Rotten Tomatoes, both for critic and audience scores.
Really?
Yes.
But I did not think Dark Fate did very well.
It didn't. That's another thing they have in common, is they both lost money.
Did not do well at the box
office. Yeah, lost money at the box office. So it's another one of those situations that seems more frequent lately. Maybe I'm just noticing it more, but it seems fairly... Birds of Prey actually suffered from this a little bit, where the people that see the thing... seem to like it in terms of, you know, 70% critic score, 84% audience score, whatever. But not many people go to see it because enough people didn't like it. The word of mouth wasn't very good, and so on and so forth. Like, I mean, you didn't like Birds of Prey, for example.
No.
Now, we thought both films were fine. Like, when I look at the Rotten Tomatoes scores for them, I think that sounds about right. But I also don't think that if we'd gone to see them in the theater, we would have thought they were quite worth the price of a ticket. I mean, they're, again, fine, but not. Yeah. But we were pretty glad we were watching them on disc. But I think in both cases, probably the reason they didn't do well in the box office was for Dr. Sleep, the guy who wrote and directed it, when you read interviews... from him, he even kind of says this, that it was like he wanted this film to sort of bridge a gap between people who are fans of the Stephen King Shining books, of which there's two. There's The Shining and there's Dr. Sleep.
Yep.
And a lot of the people who are fans of the books are not fans of Kubrick's movie.
No, because neither is King.
That's exactly right. And then you have people who are fans of the movie, probably have never even seen the book. or read the book. They don't have anything against it necessarily. They just don't care. And so
I've read the movie several times. I've never seen the book.
I mean, the thing is, I do read movies, but anyway. So this guy was kind of trying to bridge a gap there, and he succeeded insofar as Stephen King liked what he did.
All right.
And, but I don't think the book fans are going to like the movie, or I don't think they did like the movie. And I know because I've heard from a lot of fans of the movie that they did not like this movie. In fact, one critic was saying, you know, if they were going to do a sequel to The Shining, it should have been like this and this and this and this. But by the time they were done describing what they thought the sequel should be, it didn't resemble the book, the sequel book that Stephen King wrote at all. And it's like, I don't like it when reviewers do that. It's not a review if you're telling the filmmakers what they should have done, what they should have made.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not critiquing the film that way. But the same thing kind of went with the Terminator movie, in that if you're a diehard fan of the films.
Except what does that mean at this point? Because nobody's a diehard fan of the film.
The first two, anyway.
There we go.
And most of the people who are complaining about it were that.
And we have had three or four between Terminator 2 and Terminator Dark Fate.
I want to say three.
And they've all been hated.
Yes, by fans, by people who consider themselves fans. Yeah. So a lot of people were looking forward to this film as being something that was going to start over and basically...
Fourth time's the charm.
Well, yeah. But those other films weren't erasing the films before them. And this one was.
Yeah, yeah.
So...
Well, I think Genesis kind of tried to.
So people were sort of excited about this, but there's not much of a spoiler here because it's in the first 5 minutes of the film. Their complaint is that, like, the very first scene pretty much makes everything that happens in the first two movies irrelevant.
Yeah.
And some of it makes it stupid. Like, there are beliefs and attitudes and actions that people did in the second movie that... their beliefs were totally wrong, and so their actions were totally stupid. When they were heroic and whatever before, and now they're dumb. It's like, wait a minute, you just retroactively made the first two movies bad. So fans of Terminator hated it, and
non-fans of Terminator didn't bother to see it.
Exactly.
Why the fuck would you?
That's exactly right. And now I agree with all those criticisms, but I'm not so invested in the franchise that I couldn't enjoy the movie for what it was. And so it was fine. We both thought they were fine. But we totally understood why people didn't go to see them.
Why are they making these things? I mean, I wasn't shocked because it's him. But I rolled my eyes real hard when he was writing Dr. Sleep. Yeah. I was like, we don't need it. But in my head, Stephen King is just writing for himself. Stephen King has a universe in his head that he desperately wants to put on paper and whatever. And he wrote it. And then I find out they're making a movie of it. And I'm like, fucking why?
Well, my understanding is Dr. Sleep, all the critics, even some of the ones that don't like it that much, are pointing this out and praising it for this. That it explores addiction in a fairly effective way, and Stephen King himself struggled with alcohol addiction.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they thought it did a good job with that. And
you can play off the original Shining with that. Again, the book, not so much the movie.
And the film explored that, and the performances in the film were very, very good.
From what I read, it sounded like a perfectly interesting film, just if it had been an original property. I mean, because that's the thing. Other than going back to the Overlook Hotel, there was nothing in the story that needed to be tied to The Shining.
Well,
there was things that are tied, but you could have done it without that easily.
In the book, in the first book, the Overlook Hotel is destroyed. So there is no going back to the Overlook Hotel.
That's true.
There is no going back to the Overlook Hotel in the book, Dr. Sleep.
And I mean, I understand that it's still Danny Torrance, but I mean, you could have done the story. I mean, people with random psychic abilities, that's every Stephen King book.
Yep,
and they're supposedly all in the same multiverse.
Nope,
so whatever. But there's no reason to make it a sequel. And people have so much tied to that. And also, when you say The Shining, people think of the Kubrick movie.
Yes, they do.
Even though there is a Stephen King approved 90s miniseries of it
right.
that I actually thought was pretty good. Not great, but pretty good. And then the book, which is very different. But yeah, so it was bizarre to me that it was getting made. And then Terminator, I don't. It's like Spider-Man, but worse. Like, stop. The first two were. Well, okay. The second one was okay. Let's be honest here, people. We all love
Judgment Day.
Yeah, we all love Terminator 2. It's go watch it again. It's a good 80s action movie with some good strong sci-fi in it. Mm-hmm. We absolutely do not need to be spending decades trying to bring it back.
Well,
why are we doing this? Why are we doing Incredibles 14 years after the first one? Why are we doing Halloween after we've made 34 crappy ones?
Well, I do think the Dr. Sleep thing is a little bit different. I mean, like I said, I think a lot of critics think, as far as the book is concerned, that Stephen King actually did have something new to say about these characters and about these experiences. And if you can say that about the book, you can also say that about the film in a way. And the film did have some, I mean, Ewan McGregor did a fantastic job. It had some really memorable scenes. I wouldn't recommend the film for you, by the way.
I would never see the film.
I don't know who I would recommend it to, but there were some good performances in it.
Well, and it's impossible to market without saying, hey, remember The Shining? That movie that you love? This is a sequel to that, even though it's really not.
But the Terminator example is different, and it's mostly a money grab for people who want to see Linda Hamilton in the movie, which my wife, I mean, that, you know, she wanted to see that.
Yeah.
And she liked seeing it. She liked seeing her in it, and she did a good job in it. And or people that want to see Arnold in the role again, which he was.
There's nobody. That's not a thing.
They had some interesting and funny moments with
people
that.
People who wanted to see Arnold in the role saw it like a year ago.
But you're right. It doesn't bring anything interesting or new. It's just.
Make me a brand new movie and show me that it has Linda Hamilton in it with a shotgun kicking ass. I'll go see it. Super doesn't have to be about the Terminator.
That's right.
This is the kind of sequels sell, supposedly. Original stories don't. I'm like, especially when you're the necromancy. I hate the necromancy. Like, stop resurrecting either shit that hasn't been around for 20 years or shit that hasn't been good for 20 years.
But it's like you always say, it's part of this is Hollywood's version of being risk averse, right? They think this is a safe bet, you know, and it doesn't make any logical sense, as you're always pointing out to me, but it is what.
No, but I wish they would be consistent in their terrible views, because we try something new, we try something diverse, we try something sticking our necks out, it is unsuccessful, or at least not as successful as we hoped, it means that kind of movie can't
happen. Ever be made again.
But we did something successful once, we will do 12 shitty sequels that
even
make
if
us,
they're not successful.
That cost us money,
yeah.
And are convinced somehow, basically. If you do it successfully once, you think it'll always be successful. If you do it poorly without having done it successfully, you have to do it successfully the first time.
Yeah.
And if that happens, we will make a billion movies about it.
And fail every other time.
Yes.
And keep doing it. Yeah.
But
yeah.
If you didn't succeed the first time,
never do it again. Yeah. No, I mean, that's the classic example there is like, female led actioners and things like that. Like, whenever they've tried, I mean, let's look at Atomic Blonde, for example. That didn't do that well in the box office. And, you know, there's sometimes discussion when a movie like that comes out that, well, maybe movies like this don't work. And then people like you and I are sitting there going, you guys make male led actioners that fail all the time. And it never occurs to you to think, well, maybe we should stop making these. You never think that but suddenly it's a
waiting.
Female actioner and you think, well, we can't make them with female leads anymore. That doesn't make sense.
I'm waiting for the next Bourne Identity spinoff. I know the last one tanked hard, but I'm convinced somebody's going to pull it up again. Or wait, or they did a TV show. Is that dead yet? I don't know. They made a TV show called Treadwell.
Worse, they'll make a Bourne Identity spinoff. They'll decide, oh, let's make Bourne a woman of color instead. It'll fail because of how unoriginal it is, but everyone will blame the fact that it was a woman of color instead. It's like, you guys are, one movie critic that I follow has said, and I think they're probably right, that Hollywood doesn't consume its own products. It doesn't watch its own movies. Yep. It doesn't watch its own TV shows. So how can they even know how to do their jobs? But they're the ones up there doing it. They're making decisions about what we watch when they aren't anything like us. They're not anything like the audiences that they are, you know, that they're making the product for.
Been some really fun cracked videos about the idea of, like, Hollywood doesn't understand how most jobs work.
Yeah, right.
Or anything else. Poverty and things like
or
this.
Or money.
It doesn't happen.
How money works. And it's so true.
It's so ingrained that a lot of stuff the videos brought up, I didn't think about. Like, I am really convinced that there's a lot of jobs out there that hinge on making one presentation to a big account. And if you don't get there and make that presentation to win the account, your job is over. Because so many movies and TV shows have had that. And then they're like, no, that's how it is when you're pitching a movie. That's not how it is in most every other. Right. And I was like, yeah, I guess in my head, I've never had one of those jobs. But in my head, there are lots of those. I'm like, no, that's just a movie thing.
You know, something else along these lines that I always notice, and I have for as long as I can remember, is I notice what type of house the characters live in. I always notice that because coming from a working class background and things, and a lot of times characters in a show or a movie will either have an occupation and I know a person in that occupation, or I know someone similar, you know.
Yeah.
So I've got a pretty good idea of what their house should look like, and it often does not look like that. I mean, big houses, big nice houses with, like, I mean, there's no way they could afford.
Well, and that's been a joke for years and years, is weirdly unaffordable apartments.
Yes,
and
yes.
Lois Lane, the entire cast of Friends, all this stuff, and that has been a thing for years. And then just recently, suddenly, I've grown sympathetic for it because I finally have figured out. That's so you can make it into a show or a movie. You need space that you can comfortably film, and you need space that you can comfortably have interesting blocking.
Yep.
And so I'm like, yeah, I get that now. It would be really weird to do it in a realistic place. It would always film as it's that whole such and such doesn't look like such and such on film concept.
Yeah, but they also want to glamorize the character. I mean, they want you to like the character, want to be the character. And I think sometimes they think the better dressed they are and the nicer place they live in, the more you're going to care about them. Which I don't know if that's true or not.
And in every romantic comedy, a man is an ad exec or an architect.
Yeah.
And a woman is either owns some sort of boutique store, is a chef, or has a vague behind-the-camera job in television.
And when the plot... clearly,
or as a blogger. Nowadays, a woman can be a blogger because they're tech savvy.
And then, and if the plot is obviously taking them away from their job for weeks, there's no consequence.
It's fine.
It's like, wait a minute, what about their job? I mean, this seems like they're like going cross country here, and they're gone for days. They're never calling work. It doesn't seem like they asked for time off. It's like, this is so weird.
And it came up because there's a lot of very poor families on TV. And they always make it. And, I mean, it goes back to, you know, even The Simpsons are always about to be bankrupt, and they never are, unless that's the plot of the episode, and then it comes back by the end. And it's constantly a thing, so it can be a constant source of struggle. We need that money, or we can't afford to lose that, or whatever, but it never really happens. And then Chuck Lorre did the sitcom Mom, which is the one with Anna Faris, who's a recovering alcoholic, and she's living with her recovering alcoholism. Yeah. It's not a bad sitcom, honestly, for a generic CBS sitcom like all of them. But one of the things about it is they took the poverty seriously. At the end of season one, they lost their apartment.
Mm.
Like, they genuinely got evicted by then. Like, this was a real thing. in it, and they took it kind of seriously, which was sort of impressive.
That's still going, isn't it? Or
I don't know if it still is, because I don't have real TV.
I mean, CW syndicates it, because
it's definitely been a syndication.
We sometimes see the end of it when we're going to watch some other show.
That's when I've usually watched it. I don't know if it's still on or not. It might be.
The parts we've seen are very funny and very real.
Yes. It has a very good ensemble. Yeah, and it's very focused on that. It's very realistic. It's a Chuck Lorre CBS sitcom, but it's there. And this is the same guy who did Grace Under Fire. That was his first one, which was Grace Butler as a single alcoholic mom and all that. And that was a very realistic show in the same way. And that show actually, I believe, ended because of the main actor's actual addiction problem caused that show to end. But so it does that seriously. He's also the guy who does Big Bang Theory, so you know, whatever. But we should draw a thing, or else there won't be a thing.
Okay. Yeah, Big Bang Theory, that's right. But they're very different shows.
Well, and Lot isn't, I think Two and a Half Men was his. All the big ones are his.
But the episodes I've seen of those two shows I don't like at all. No. But this mom show is like, wow, this is very smart and raw.
It's still a CBS sitcom. Over time, it's like, yeah, I get it. And it sanitizes in certain ways.
Well, and its ensemble is not very diverse either.
No, but impressive. They've got some heavy hitters back there. Yeah. Jamie Presley's in there. A woman who I've seen on every TV show ever, but I don't know her.
Octavia.
Oh yeah, Octavia Spencer an extended guest spot on it, and Anna Faris and Allison Janney. Who
they're not? You know, yeah, they're something. Yeah, I mean she's got doesn't she have an Oscar now? Didn't she get a
Janney?
I want to say it was for a best supporting actress for
August Osage County or something like that.
No, for the thing that Margot Robbie did. With the skater.
I, Tonya?
Yeah.
Was she in that?
Or? Well, she got nominated anyway. I don't know if she won. I thought she won, though. And that was really impressive.
Allison Janney's a hell of an actor.
Yeah, she's got range. I mean, she can do a lot of stuff. Anyway, Jazz wants to know, who are some of the people you think are expressing good ideas well in the world today?
That is a hard one.
That's a very hard question. I read an address to West Point. It wasn't the West Point graduates. It was like the West Point plebes or whatever. Like they'd gotten in, and so this guy did an address, and he was talking about leadership, and he was talking about what leadership really is and how there's a crisis of leadership in our country, as everybody knows. But this, everyone says that, and everyone talks about it, and some people know what they're talking about, and some people don't seem to. This little lecture, speech, or whatever, was very, very good. It's on the Aether Theater page on Facebook, if anyone's interested. It's a little long, but it's very good. But what it made me think about as I was reading it, and the reason I bring it up, is because, you know, even people who are doing work that you might like or that you might think is going to be good for the future, like Elon Musk, for example. Mm-hmm. When you hear them talk, they often don't express their ideas very well. And sometimes they express ideas that are, you know, really dumb. And you're like, well, how can this person be doing this thing, which seems so cool, and yet this idea is not very smart? I mean, this is a very difficult, I'm going to say impossible question for me to answer. Because most of the people that you're going to see in the news over and over and over and over again, even if you think some of what they're doing is good or some of what they're doing is smart or helpful, they're always going to do or say something that you're like, you know, really?
Well, I had a person that I thought was on your list. I don't know. You haven't talked about them in a while, but Russell Brand was definitely into this category.
Oh, well, actually, that's a very good point. You know, I don't agree with him on everything, and I don't appreciate a lot of his work necessarily. But yes, I've seen I'm subscribed to his channel, and I sometimes will watch his videos, and I think he does express his ideas, I think, very well. I mean, you don't have to agree with them or anything, but he seems sincere. He you know, he never like offends me or anything. So yeah, maybe Russell Brand. Maybe that's actually a pretty good one. But I don't watch all of his videos. If the title intrigues me, I'll watch it. So yeah, that's a good one. I guess I forgot about him. And maybe if I thought about it hard, I'd think of some more. But I'm kind of primed from that thing I read to be like, yeah, who out there? You know, even people who I admire what they're doing and I admire some of what they say, there's other things it's like, what's wrong with that person?
And that is tricky. There's two things that, to me, make up this idea of expressing good ideas well. And one is, well, I guess there's three things. One is they're saying stuff that I believe in and that makes sense to me. And then another is that they're saying it in a way that I think makes things clear. That, like, not just makes sense to me, but I think would make sense to most people.
Mm-hmm.
It is an approachable explanation of things.
Yeah.
Lots of people say stuff that I agree with that I'm like, yeah, that sounded echo chambery as hell. And then the third part, and this is just a thing on me, is too many people out there come in with this level of hubris that I can't cope with. I'm like, I agree with you on this, but the way you're talking makes me think that I disagree with you on most things.
Yeah, you know, that is
because
a big
you're
part
coming
of it.
Off as somebody who thinks they know everything, and that right there tells me you don't know very well.
Like a lack of humility.
Yeah.
Yeah, that bothers me too.
And that's the thing. And it's expressing a good idea isn't saying this is a good idea. It's saying this is an idea I had.
Yeah. And this is,
I'm just going to tell you what it is.
And this is why I think it has merit.
Yeah.
What do you think? That's right. That's exactly
that
right.
That being said, most of the people nowadays that fall into that category for me are comedians. Not all of them, by a long shot.
Yeah.
But the specific people I can think of are. Back in the day, Jon Stewart would have been on that list. He doesn't talk as much, and I don't know. I'm not feeling it as much from him nowadays. Two big ones for me are Hasan Minhaj and Trevor Noah. Trevor Noah is very impressive to me these days. He is clever and he is witty, but he is incredibly insightful in very open ways that he makes me think things about things differently. And he says things that I didn't think you could say without sort of being offensive to somebody, but he's not, like, I don't know. He thinks a lot about a lot of things and speaks well on them. And sort of the same thing with Hasan Minhaj. Samantha Bee is also in that group, although I'll admit I haven't watched her show in a long time, but she speaks a lot of that. There are people that do it for me in that I feel like I'm learning from them. There's a lot of journalists, and it mostly comes out of the two Gizmodo sites that do most of the politics I read about, which is The Root and Jezebel. So Allison Shoemaker, Michael Harriet, Stephen Crocker Jr. Like, those two sites, they also have a lot of silly stuff, a lot of goofy stuff, sometimes stuff I don't agree with. Trish has problems with stuff from The Root because they will have very interesting articles that start with very elaborate, jokey, convoluted insult and metaphors for the first, like, two or three paragraphs. And it just feels too heavily like an opinion piece when she wants the news out of it. But they've got a lot of good stuff to say there. But yeah, mostly it's comedians. Certain kinds of comedians, but a ton of them. They have some incredible moments because I think comedy is a very, in a lot of cases, not in all cases, but for a lot of people, comedy is very closely tied to essentially psychology, because you got to break down what's funny, why is it funny, what about me is funny, how can I look about what's happened in my life, including things that are terrible, and look on them as funny? What do people laugh for? What do they don't laugh for? What makes me laugh that doesn't make an audience laugh, and vice versa, and why? And I think you start thinking about that stuff, and it is it gives you good insight.
Well, yeah, I mean, the so-called sense of humor is, it's a real thing.
Yep.
And you can really develop it, and it, I also think that it gives you quite a bit of insight into human nature and human behavior, into our culture, and all kinds of other things.
Yeah, and sometimes there are methods of approaching comedy that don't do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But a lot more comics nowadays are doing that.
Although there's a lot of comedy that people might think isn't that sophisticated, but it actually is hard work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's
don't get me wrong. Yeah, and I don't want to discount them. I'm just saying, I don't learn as much.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Sometimes
right,
I still laugh my ass
off.
Sure,
right, right.
Some of the great genius comedians out there, I don't think had to do too much psychological introspection, you know, for their stuff. But it's still funny, but it's just a different method. Just today, I went and I picked up lunch today, and I was listening to Sirius, and I ended up listening to an old, in fact, I'm pretty sure it was on Ed Sullivan, Joan Rivers. And that stuff's great. But what I found really interesting, first of all, is, like, Joan Rivers' perspective back then is the same she had through her whole life. Like, at that point, she was already talking about making sure she never aged gracefully and you have to look good and all that stuff. But also, doing shit that people considered original when comedians were doing it decades later. I didn't realize. She's doing this shit about guys pick up a younger wife and nobody bats an eye. But if you saw an old lady with, and I mean, and some of it's hilarious. She's like, a guy walks in and he's 98 and he's bald with a cigar and he's got an 18-year-old on his arm and nobody looks twice. But if a woman came in 98 bald with a cigar in her mouth,
yeah,
you'd look. But I mean, a ton of this whole thing about all this shit that men can get away with and that women can't, and what women need and how women choose to marry and why, because they need to and stuff like this. And I had heard her material before, but none of it had struck me as that directly, obviously subversive.
Hmm.
And I was very impressed with that.
Now that you mentioned a few examples, you mentioned news, and so that made me think. Well, are there any news sources that I think are expressing themselves well? And there are. I mean, I've curated a news feed of people I can respect. And there's no reason to name them. Just suffice it to say, you can find news sources out there who are giving you the news, not mingled with a lot of opinion. And the person delivering that news is very smart and competent. So there is that stuff out there, I suppose. But as I say, I've been kind of primed to be cynical about leadership in the United States. So all I can think of when this question is asked is, where are all the leaders? And you're right, it's a humility issue, right? It's like, as soon as some leader says something I like or I can agree with, maybe they say it in a way that I think, like you said, is, I think you're right, but I think the way you're saying this is you're being a jerk, you know? And then sure enough, not long after that, they say something I don't like, and they say it just as forcefully and just as much of a jerk.
I will say post-presidency, both Obamas has been pretty nice. They have said a lot of things that I've thought was good. I kind of wish they would say more of it, but I also understand you spent 8 years in the White House. You can take a break now. Like, I get that. But I think there's a certain level of now unburdened by the requirements of the office. They can speak a little bit more from the heart, and it's pretty good stuff.
I've mostly heard about what they said from other people and not what they're saying. I mean, where's
Twitter is a lot of it.
Oh, well, yeah, I don't ever get anything from Twitter.
All this quarantine stuff is making me think about getting back on Twitter. Gotta really would have to chop down who I follow, but I've been thinking about it.
I considered getting back on Facebook after, I mean, I've been gone for what? I mean, 8 years or something?
Yeah, I still think about getting away from Facebook. All right, we are over time, so we should shut it down. So, everybody, stay indoors. It's like that Mitchell and Webb looks good. Stay indoors. And be safe and go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com. Tell us what you're up to while you're trapped in the closet. Weird to make an R. Kelly reference at this point, but I'm going to stick by it. All right, bye.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.